And welcome back to the Press Play Podcast, the only podcast on the internet that thinks that New York style is superior to every other style in any way, shape, form, or fashion, and it's not even close. I'm your host, Matt Dasher.
We do not think that. But you're right.
Yeah.
No, he's right.
Yeah, I'm Ian.
Yeah. I'm Seth, and yeah, Chicago pizza can suck my ass.
It's so bad. I've actually been to Chicago, and it's the most famous place that everybody tells you to go to. I'm like, this is trash.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like what Jon Stewart said. It's a fucking casserole.
It's a thick pie.
So,
it's garbage. Anyway.
We're recording on a new time now, ladies and gentlemen, apparently, because Ian is wants to get employed. Gamefully, hope.
No, just this week because this is the day we're recording this week. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled program next week.
All right, good to know. And this week, coming out of Halloween Horror Month, we're doing my pick of the week, which is a twofer. So get your popcorn ready because we're going to be covering Ridley Scott's Alien and the subsequent sequel, Aliens. Gentlemen, we've all seen these.
Directed by James Cameron.
By James Cameron, exactly. We've all seen these films, all three of us, probably mm-hmm. multiple times. We're going to cover it movie by movie, obviously. There's no other real format here. It's not a versus or a who did what better. It's just, hey, we're going to cover these two fucking movies because they deserve to be covered. With that being said, we'll start off with Alien. And before I turn it over to you, I just want to say that when I first saw this movie, I was very, very young, and my father described it to me. He said he saw it in the movie theater, and it's one of only two movies that actually scared him. This film, and when he was a very young child, the original Frankenstein. So those are the only two movies that have actually terrified him in his entire life. And
I could totally see that, actually, because, you know, being what, 1979, this is one of the first to actually do horror and sci-fi well. Yeah. Other people tried it in the very early days of cinema, you know, with the whole, even with the just aliens out to kill people prospect. It's been done before this, but this was the first one that was done on a huge budget. It had a extraordinarily competent director behind the camera.
Very well put together.
And and the effects were just off the fucking charts, even to today's standards. Yeah. And, you know, I've seen this movie a couple times. I think this is maybe my fifth or sixth time seeing it, because I like to space out these movies, especially because I like to enjoy it. I like to let time pass and enjoy it. You know, I haven't seen this movie in like 3 or 4 years. I want to watch it again, and that's the same for the. I think I saw this movie when I lived in Florida, which was about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching it like this is one of those cases where, yeah, it's a slow draw at the beginning, but you know something's going to happen, and you're ready, and it never feels like a drag. And I watched the director's cut. On both of these, right. I watched the director's cut of Alien and the special edition of Aliens because I have them on Blu-ray. Nothing in this movie drags.
No,
nothing is irrelevant. You know, everything has a purpose, at least in my opinion. And just what a fantastic film!
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This is almost perfect sci-fi. And yeah, it does dive into a little bit of horror. Like the ambiance of the film is horror. The backdrop is sci-fi. It's a perfect little sci-fi film, and I thoroughly enjoy it every time I watch it. Rebel.
No, the original Alien is just a very well-made film.
Yeah.
From the set design, which is fucking fantastic, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I love how everything looks so dirty and dingy and industrial. It's a great interpretation of what the future might look like, mm-hmm. especially on that type of ship, because we're not dealing with soldiers in this movie. They're
miners, basically.
They're miners, but yeah, they're basically miners. They're blue collar workers, and they just happen to, yeah. by accident, quote unquote, happened to pick up this alien, unbeknownst to all of them, and the tension that follows after once John Hurt's character gets impregnated, the tension from there on after, it just keeps ramping up and it doesn't stop. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is one of the Go ahead, Ian.
No, go ahead. I was going to say that it does it so well because there's a couple of films that do it, but this one probably, in my opinion, did it the best. It's that it's not only the tension, but the feeling of isolation. Yeah. Because the very first thing you see in this movie is that this ship, as big as it is, only has 7 people on it, which means no one is coming to help you. So you're fucked. These 7 people are fucked, and there's nothing they can do.
And
that I. Real.
This is also the first film that probably did it, and still to this day, one of the very few films that has done it right. And I think this is the gold standard as far as this particular style of film is. This is an implied horror movie. A lot of stuff happens off camera, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
You don't,
because there's only one, maybe two times that you see the alien in its full form, and that's it's not for very long.
Oh. Yeah, I love how they keep the when they're showing the alien from and pretty much entirely from the perspective of the crew, and no, they never saw it that often. If you saw it, you're dead
quickly, mm-hmm.
and that's when they show it is when it kills people. When you see it, you're dead,
and those are all quick shots. And very well done quick shots.
But that fact that they establish that in the script is just wonderful tension writing.
Agreed.
Because you've established that once you see this thing, you're dead. And in the end, Ripley sees this thing, and holy shit, she's gonna die.
Yeah.
So this movie, it almost doesn't have a happy ending, and I wish they had the balls to not have it one, but then we wouldn't get our sequel.
Exactly. Yeah. So, as far as, and Ian, you mentioned it earlier, the backdrop, or not the backdrop of this film, but the set design, it just felt real. You know?
It felt lived in.
It felt like, all right, yeah, I've been to this factory. I've walked through these corridors. Mm-hmm.
And that's especially that's also given in the performance of our main players, just the way they act around each other. These aren't people who are just meeting for the first time, like in one of the other Alien spin-off movies where he fights another science fiction character I will not name. But these people have worked together; they know each other, and they act like coworkers. Right. That's how they behave.
And
it's just wonderful from everybody.
And speaking to that, I think everybody in this movie. Be nailed their part to a fucking T. Everybody was believable. Nobody was like, all right, you know, I could. These roles were not really interchangeable. Each character brought their own identity to the role, or each actor brought their own identity to the character. So you couldn't really interchange these characters, even though you don't have a few of them for very long. They felt very, very grounded with the person that was portraying them, and you didn't.
They felt like real people.
They did.
That's true, but there's I almost disagree because I think out of the 7, there's maybe 3 that their dialogue probably could have been switched out between the others. But the obviously Ripley, the captain whose name I never remember, Dallas. Yeah, and I forgot his name, but the African American character, and John Hurt. They are the 4 that had to, and the android. So the other 2, the lady and the other guy, they really didn't do a lot for me, but they were okay, but they were surrounded by other great players. So they were just kind of in the background, which they didn't really bring much to the movie anyway, because they didn't have to, because they're kind of just there, but that's okay.
Yeah, they were cannon fodder.
Yeah.
They were there,
but that's
they
okay.
were there to be slaughtered. And one thing that this movie leads you to believe is that, all right, it's established pretty early on that Ripley's going to be at least a player in the film, But the film leads you to believe that Dallas is going to be your main character. And for a while he is, until he's not.
Well, he never really... He was never the main focus. It was more it was giving everybody their proper amount of screen time. So you really couldn't. This movie could have gone either way. It could have gone in because Ripley got just as much screen time as Dallas before Dallas got roped off. So it really could have gone either way. And so you just said his name, the black guy.
Koto. I don't know his character. Koto. But that's the actor's name.
Yeah, but all those three got probably the most screen time up until two of their demises.
And I think Koto's character was probably my favorite character throughout the entire film.
Oh, he was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, he was the guy that just, all he really cared about, on the, you know, this wasn't his family. All he talks about is his money and how much he should be getting paid more, so on and so forth, until...
Parker.
Until the other janitor, I'll call them, I guess is what they are, the mechanics, the skinny mechanic gets killed. After that happens, he's gung-ho, wants to take care and protect everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah, I had to pull up their names. The other guy that is working with Parker, his name is Brett.
Right, Brett. Mm. Yeah.
And besides John Hurt, he's the first one to go because he went chasing a cat, which I thought was it's the most cliche jump scare in horror.
Yeah.
And you somehow found a way to put a cat on the Nostromo.
Yeah.
How did you even do that?
Oh, no, dude, when Ripley's at the end when they're separated and they're going to meet back at the shuttle. Because she's going to set off the self-destruct, right? And she's looking for this. She's, Jonesy, here, kitty, kitty. I'm like, fuck that cat.
Seriously. Who fucking cares?
Get the hell out of
the
there.
The cat itself was actually kind of a prop because once it's established what's going on the ship, you know, when the alien comes in and the facehugger's wrapped around John Hurt's face and it bursts through his chest and it escapes. From that point forward, anytime you see the cat... the alien's there.
Mm-hmm.
And the cat's the only one that fucking knows it.
This is true.
Yeah. But I was too worried about the cat.
Yeah, now that you mentioned it, I never really paid attention to that before, but now that you mentioned it, yeah, that's pretty quick and clever.
Yeah. So I think the more I watch it, the more... because I know it's going to happen, but I think they kind of dropped the ball with the twist of Ash being a synthetic person, because they really didn't give you a whole lot of hints until she just knocked his head off. Like, if there were hints, that's fine. You could have just had it be he is an agent for the Wayland Corporation or whatever. The whole him a robot thing came out of buttfuck nowhere.
It did come out of nowhere, but I actually...
in an almost perfect movie.
Yeah. The hints that they give you are extremely fucking subtle, and you only notice them on a rewatch.
Right. Yeah. Oh, trust me, I know that. Because I'm like, yeah, but if you're watching it for the first time, you probably went, what?
Mm.
But they have those?
But the movie is feeding your brain information. You know, when he says, don't touch it, and then there's something subtle whenever they are... looking at the facehugger, I think, and the look that he gives Ripley
was very
robotic.
Just
that of what are you know? Yeah. I'm kind of watching you,
right?
I want to, you know, and I'm not on your side,
right? Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And I don't know who's the actor that played the android. He's a very popular British actor.
His name's Ian Holm.
Ian Holm. Yeah. That is Bilbo Baggins himself.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Very well done.
Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah.
Yes.
I actually like that twist that he was an android. Even when I first watched this movie for the first time as a kid, I was like, oh shit, that's pretty fucking awesome. Because you don't expect it to be an android.
I consider that a twist within a twist. I think the real twist is when Ripley goes to Mother and she finds out. Mother's the ship's brain, by the way.
Yeah. She's the HAL 9000.
Right.
Yeah. And she asks Mother what's going on, and she overrides, you know, emergency overrides and stuff like that so she can find the information out. But it turns out the company pretty much sent them out there. They knew the alien was there. They wanted them to bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
And the crew was expendable.
Which, yeah. By the way...
Which, when you find out that he's an android, that complete... Okay, nothing that this company said, nothing that you know, was as it was.
Right.
Sure. But how stupid of a company are you running when your directive can be overridden? Like, you said this information is only... It should only be viewed by the science officer. Ash. Okay, but she just looks at it anyway. Well, you know, at least Star Wars had 66, Order 66. Like, no one knew what that meant except for the stormtroopers. Why not have an executive order that only the robot understands instead of just spelling it out for Ripley? How fucking stupid are you?
Right, yeah. And
she just looked at it and she's like, oh, we're fucked.
I also
it tells her you can't look at it. She says, "But with this code, I can." Okay, sure. Yeah, you can see.
Yeah, here it is. Okay, you're all gonna die down here. She's the Red Queen now.
And I also really like how they come into contact with the alien for the first time, or the facehugger. You know, like you said, they get a distress call, and on this desolate fucking asteroid where nothing lives, allegedly, they find an alien ship. You know, and the alien ship's filled with these fucking eggs. And, of course, Prometheus explains how that all went
down. Can we just... Okay, yeah. Before you go on.
Yeah.
I want to stop you right there. But I hate that those movies exist.
Yeah.
So do like, I, actually.
Like, Alien and Aliens. Like, I was telling Seth before we started recording. I have the Blu-ray quadrilogy. I only watch half of it. And I hate... I would love being... the only person on the planet that's only ever seen Alien and Aliens, because I hate Prometheus and how they fucked everything up, and especially Alien Covenant. Yeah. Those movies are stupid, they're dog shit. At least Alien 3 and 4 are hilarious, but I don't want to watch
them. Exactly.
But I hate rewatching Alien knowing that Prometheus did so bad.
Yeah, because it didn't happen.
Well, that goes back to the thing. Did you want to know?
No, I really didn't want to know. I'd never cared.
Yeah. I mean, they
now, before Prometheus came out, I'm like, I don't care.
Got enough of an explanation in the original film. All right, so this alien spacecraft crashed here. It's got these eggs. Something hatched. We're fucked. What more do you need to know? This is where they come from. We don't need another backstory and the aliens that brought them here. That's irrelevant because it's not about them. It's about what we just picked up.
Right. And we're not going to harp on Prometheus all night. I just wanted to bring this up one more time, or at least once. Prometheus totally prequeled its own franchise, because in the Star Wars prequels, everything looks more sleek and more futuristic than the older movies, even though they're set before.
Yeah.
Why does Prometheus do the same thing? It's like, how are you going to take place before Alien and not make yourself look just as old? You tried to be all cool and sleek. Fuck off.
Yeah.
I hate those movies, and I'm done talking about
agree.
Them.
I've watched them once, and I haven't watched them since. But another thing this film gives us is one of the most iconic on-screen monsters in cinematic history, the Xenomorph.
Yes.
Which...
I've always found it so...
extremely cool design.
And I've always found it so intelligent that they made it an animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, because realistically, I love... by the way, I was going to say this earlier. Hats off to, you know, the effects crew for pulling off Ash with his head cut off. That was amazing. And he's talking about how it's the perfect life form. And if you watch it multiple times, you start to realize, in a way, it is. It's a perfect hunter. It's got a great self-defense mechanism. And it's not burdened with arrogance and foolishness and greed like human beings are, because that especially goes out the window in Aliens. Like, human beings are fucking stupid.
Yeah.
What this creature is, it's an apex predator. That just happened to be brought. It's an apex predator.
Yeah.
Slash parasite. Well, it's not a parasite. It's the product of a parasitic life form.
It's right. Apex Evolution.
Apex Evolution. And it's a perfect predator. Like you said, it's got a great self-defense mechanism. Its blood is literally acid. It's stealth. It can blend into its environment, very, especially on this ship. The way the curvature of the head, how it looked like the bulkheads, and you just... And even in Aliens, which we'll cover in a second, you see the aliens well before you actually see the aliens. They're all in the walls, and you...
Not to mention...
the entire time, you just don't know they're aliens until they come out, until they, like, wake up and start attacking.
Not to mention the time span from bursting out of a chest and being about the size of a Coke can.
Yeah.
And to growing to full size in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, very quick.
That's fucking terrifying.
Very quickly, yeah.
Very quickly.
So, yeah, you just hats off all around to this fucking film, dude, because it's
perfect.
It is
a sci-fi film.
It's an icon to cinema.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing I would change about this movie. Like, really at all.
It's...
I mean, aside the nitpicks that I brought up, I love them for what they are, and I wouldn't change them either.
It's dark, but it's not unwatchable. I mean, you can still see everything that's going on in the dark. It's very well shot
and very well
lit. The score, there's not much of a score, but when you get one, it fits perfectly.
Not really.
It's, like I said, you know, it's perfect sci-fi. The culmination, the ending scene, when she's in the jump ship and she thinks she's safe. Now, one thing I will say that was very, very 70s is when she's in the jump ship and the actual mothership explodes, that was terrible. That was absolutely terrible CGI. Special effects. That looked so bad. But then, you know, she's in the jump ship and she thinks she's good to go. And boom, there's the alien asleep in the wall. And that was some of the most tension-filled moments in the entire movie. Because it's asleep, she kind of disturbs it, but it doesn't fully wake up. And she's got to figure out inside this little fucking shuttle, how am I going to survive this now? And quick thinking, which I didn't see coming, but goddamn was it epic. She fucking blows it out the damn hatch. And then burns it up in the fucking afterburners. Great. Absolutely fucking fantastic.
Yep. And did about half of that before she got into the spacesuit in a tank top and underwear, which I'm sure every teenage boy, when this movie came out, enjoyed the fuck out of. Because I'm disappointed in you, Dasher. It's been 22 minutes, and we haven't brought up once how hot Sigourney Weaver was and is to this day.
The only thing I'll say to that is Sigourney Weaver has never been more hotter than she was in Ghostbusters when she was a...
No.
Yeah, that's true.
No. Galaxy Quest.
She was extremely hot in this film. Extremely hot.
She was, but you know what? A funny thing. I'm watching it, and the scene comes. You know, the scene happens, and we get to see Sigourney Weaver in her half pulled up panties, and I'm like, her underwear just fits weird.
It did.
It's like straight across the very top part of her ass crack, and it's like digging into her hips and stuff. I'm like, that's okay.
Not complaining.
I'm just saying it doesn't seem very comfortable.
Yeah,
and it took us till I think Alien 4 to finally see her without a shirt off.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Isn't this a horror movie, or at least elements of one? Where are the boobies? Yeah.
But, you know, this movie gets an A+, I'm sure, all the way around the board.
A+. It has a 98 on Rotten Tomatoes. Well deserved.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen the film, trust me, even if you've heard everything we've said, we really haven't spoiled
not
shit.
Not really.
It's just that good of a movie.
And
so now we get on to the sequel, the 1986 James Cameron film, Aliens.
We go from sci-fi horror to sci-fi action.
Sci-fi horror to sci-fi action, exactly. And this is more a sci-fi movie than Alien. Aliens is your quintessential sci-fi movie, I think.
And it's also probably one of the first movies I saw, besides Empire, where I was like, I think I like this one more. But that's just the gold standard. That's everyone's opinion, but... it's justified. And if you don't, if you think Alien is better than Aliens, you're also not wrong. Right. It just depends on what you like. But for me, I think Aliens is my preferred movie in the franchise.
It is, but it's also a completely different movie than Aliens.
No, you're not wrong. Different. Like I said, it's a sci-fi action. Yeah. There's no horror about it. But you know, it just depends on what you prefer. I much more prefer horror, but I also love action movies. And this one just did it well.
See this fact, I think Alien is the better film, but I find myself watching Aliens more.
Like I said earlier, I space out both movies because if I'm like when you announced last week that we were gonna watch Alien, I don't think I've ever watched Alien and not immediately put on Aliens.
Yeah,
I never watch these two separate. I usually always watch them together.
Right. Yeah. Right. And the director's cut of Aliens was damn near 3 hours, but it did not feel 3 hours. It was a very well-paced film.
Yeah. It really did because when I watched it, there was a little message from James Cameron. He's like, you know, thank you for watching. This is you know, I had a lot of things I wanted to keep in the film back in the day, but now it's like a two-hour and 45-minute movie, I believe. Yeah, 2:34, and I'm like, I got done watching it like 2 hours ago. That damn sure didn't feel like 2.5 hours.
And as the first one didn't, I think the first one was 1:47, and the second one's 2:34, and neither one of them dragged at, especially two. If one dragged even a little bit, two made up for it because this movie did not drag at all. You get the opening 15 minutes, and then the moment that set down on the planet, it's balls to the wall for the rest of the film, and I fucking love it.
Yeah, they really don't stop. Like, once the engine's revving, we're not slowing down.
No, this movie was made during a time where the general filmmaking philosophy in Hollywood was that sequels are about escalation.
Yep.
And that's exactly what James Cameron does with Aliens, is everything is escalated to 11.
Yeah.
You have more, a shitload of aliens.
Yeah. You've got the queen alien.
Yeah, you have action, just nonstop. You have
Space Marines.
More scares. You have you got Space Marines. You have more characters. You have more stakes. Everything's just more.
You got Bill Paxton,
I love the brass balls of just going that ham and going that far in and not getting cheesy.
And, yeah, because that's the thing. That's like because you're 100% right. It's like, look, we're making a sequel. We need more of everything. This we're not miners. We're Marines. So it's if we fuck up, it's because we're dealing with a superior species and B, stupid fucking decisions. Yeah. Because Yeah, we'll get into that. But, you know, and it's 57... This movie takes place, 57 years after Alien? Ripley was asleep for 57 years. And, you know, she's just floating in space. And then they recruit her to go back to the planet where they found the original alien because there's a colony now that is terraforming the planet. Well, there was.
Yeah.
There was. They're all fucked. And they bring an entire platoon of Space Marines, and the second those Space Marines touch down on the planet, shit goes wrong.
Horribly wrong.
From the word go.
Yep.
To touch on something that you said earlier, Seth, this movie ramps everything up to 11, and it does, but it still doesn't lose, at that time, the franchise's identity.
Oh no! I consider this a perfect sequel.
Agreed,
100%. Because
it takes the core, the root idea of the original film, and then it does something else with it.
Yeah,
and it stays true to its roots. It pays respect to the original film.
But it also
they don't make sequels like that anymore.
I would also say it takes a logical step forward because. Yeah. When John Hurt was exploring the eggs in Alien, you saw how many there were. This took that and said, well, what if those eggs got out? So it's a perfect continuation of, well, yeah, what would happen if that happened? Because in another James Cameron sequel, Terminator, it makes sense that Wow, he's 2 for 2 on sequels.
Yeah.
Because the Terminator left behind its arm and chip. What would happen if humanity found that and had no idea what it was and began to study it? He makes these two movies make sense because those eggs were left behind, and I don't know what his role was. I'm going to call him the Wayland lawyer or whatever. When he says that people have been terraforming that planet, and I'm like, okay, now you fucked up because we know those eggs are still there.
Exactly. And
so it makes perfect sense why we have so many more aliens. It's not just an excuse that was pulled out of the director's ass. No, we saw it in Aliens how many there were. So it makes perfect sense.
And from the moment they touched down on the planet...
And I love how much sense it makes.
From the moment they touched down on the planet and you see nobody, and then all of a sudden Bill Paxton, who, bless his heart, I love that man.
Rest in peace. Game over, man! Game over!
And he's like, I found him. They're all huddled together underneath the heating ducts. Okay, yeah. Now it's game on, because we know what that means. They're incubating, obviously, because they're underneath the fucking heating ducts. What better place to incubate eggs? And it just so happens.
But like, and that scene.
Oh yeah, and it happens quick.
That scene, it's the first that scene alone lets you know why the alien is better of a fucking species than humans, because they're literally told, turn in your magazines because we don't want anybody firing weapons in here. And at least 4 of the Marines are like, no, we're not going to do that. Like, did you not fucking hear what he just said? Yeah. You fire a gun in here, you could possibly fuck everything. And 4 of them, even Hicks, kept his shotgun like an asshole.
And the thing I love about...
Well, that's the thing, too. The guy doesn't tell them why. And, again, it's humans are stupid.
Humans are stupid because he should have explained it instead of just saying, do what I say. He's like, no, you fire a gun in here, we could all die.
Yeah, what a lot.
And instead of doing that, he just expected them to follow orders, which some of them did. But fucking hell, dude, it was so... I'm watching it for the like 6th or 7th time going, just god damn it, pay attention.
What makes that scene so perfect, that entire sequence so perfect, is there was a certain amount of suspense building up to it, because you know, all right, they're going to stumble upon the aliens and shit's going to get real. But it's how they stumbled upon the aliens. They just start appearing. Just randomly out of nowhere, they just start coming out of the fucking walls, and chaos ensues. I mean, it just happens. Just
like goddamn cockroaches.
Well, yeah, because there's 100 of them.
And
I don't even know. I don't even know how many there were, because they said like what 70 or something families, and I'm like, well, how many people constitutes a family? There could be like 300 of them. Who knows?
And
the only thing I didn't particularly know how I felt, I still don't know how I feel about it, because it's never really explained. Because even in Alien, they don't explain it, and I'm just assuming that one burst out of somebody and just developed into the queen, or was the queen always there?
I think that's there's the queen's always there. That the queen that we saw in Aliens was always there, because that's the one that has been laying the egg. But yeah, that's how a queen is born, is just a random alien bursts through somebody's chest and grows up to be a fucking queen. But that queen was there the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because something had to lay those eggs.
So I want to talk about this, because we talked about it in Terminator 2, and I want to know how you guys felt. Seth and I did. Dasher kind of disagreed with us. We talked about how Eddie Furlong set the standard for child actors in an action movie. I do not hate Newt. I never have. I very much like the character of Newt.
Served her purpose.
She was a great she served her purpose, and she was a great addition to, you know, what needed to go on, because she wouldn't be necessary if they didn't introduce the idea of Ripley having a daughter, which we're never told in Alien. And then in Aliens, she's like, I have a daughter. I told her I'd be home for her 11th birthday. I'm like, really? Because you were in space for a very long time. They said you won't be home for 10 months. What the How old was she when you left?
Right. Which begs the question. All right. So you've been asleep for 57 years. You would think the first thing you want to do is find out how your daughter is. And she never even fucking asked, how's my daughter? Can I see my daughter? Is my daughter
No, she does.
Alive?
Oh, I didn't. No, she does.
Okay.
She does.
But,
No, she asks. I don't know which version you watched. She asked in the first 10 minutes. The Wayland lawyers told her that she's like 60 something, and she died, and she was cremated. Like that was a whole scene.
I completely missed that. I don't know how or why. I don't remember that at all.
No. They told. That's one of the very first things that she finds out when she wakes up. So that explains a lot of her attachment to Newt. It's not just, you know, that she has one and it's never mentioned. She finds out in the first 5 minutes of Aliens that her daughter is fucking dead.
Well, going back to Newt, was the child that portrayed the character a great actress? No, but she didn't have to be.
No, she's a kid. I don't expect a lot of children to be Oscar winners.
She, you know, she was a terrified child, the only survivor of this massacre, and she did it by basically being an alien, sneaking around, hiding, and... you know, finding and surviving. That she was essentially a xenomorph in her actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they mostly come at night.
Mostly.
Mostly. Why did they make kids do that? They did the same fucking thing with Jake Lloyd in The Phantom Menace. Yeah.
Dude, I love that you got that you made that comparison because I fucking did the exact same thing. I mostly saved the pod. Mostly. I made that same comparison 3 hours ago. Fuck you for making me do that.
I could not help but notice it. It's like, why do they make kids? They repeat the last word, and it's always mostly.
Seriously, though, we can never stop being friends.
One critique of this movie that I do have is. These are the same alien drones that the first one had. But there was only one of them. And here, I just felt that they weren't... They were only menacing because of their number. They weren't menacing as individual drones. Whereas in the first one, it was just a fucking menace.
Well, at the same...
Only one alien against a bunch of space marines with guns would have been very fun to watch.
Yeah, they were miners. They weren't well equipped. They didn't have any kind of weapons training.
Predator, but the Predator also had weaponry too. So
the Predator was also a very much more skilled hunter and had better equipment.
I dare say,
but this one, I
wouldn't say the Predator was a much more skilled hunter because the alien is a skilled hunter.
Well, the alien's an animal.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, the Predator is a thinking...
Humans hunt tigers, too. Right.
Yeah, the Predator can think and strategize. The alien just comes at you. That's what the aliens in this one did, the same thing that the alien did, but at least the aliens, when they're in a swarm, they're more noticeable, so they can't really sneak around because there's so many of them. And they have the Marines have much more. You know, they even say when they're about to drop, he's like, "We've got this, we've got grenades, RPGs, and all this crap." I'm like, "Yeah, it makes sense that they go up against a swarm, because they're more well equipped to handle it."
What I was getting to wasn't necessarily that; it was the fact that so when you see the aliens running through the air ducts, it's like the same shot every time. It's like they put somebody in a fucking zero gravity tube and just had him flap his arms and legs around, and that's what we're going to use to make it look like the alien running through the aqueducts or the air ducts. It wasn't very well done. Just a minor nitpick. It did not take me out of the film at all. Just something that I noticed.
I mean, fair enough. I don't really I can't think of a critique that I have, and there's more you know, people in this movie than the original, and I don't think I have a problem with any of them. And just watching Lance Henriksen in anything is always a joy, even if it's a bad movie. Hellraiser 8.
Well, and the same with Bill Paxton. Watching Bill Paxton in any movie is a joy.
That's my hot take and my critique.
The only man to ever get killed by an alien, a Terminator, and a Predator,
and a cowboy.
And a cowboy.
But
I have a very subjective hot take, and that's I don't like Bill Paxton as an actor. I never have. I'm sure he was a lovely man in person. But
I've heard acting, that he is.
His acting always just got on my nerves. Everything he was ever that I ever saw him in.
Okay. I'll say this. In this one, he does get exhausting. Even me who loves this movie, I can admit that he's one of those people that you're. If he was in real life, you'd just be like, dude, will you please shut the fuck up for 2 seconds? But in Tombstone, I didn't hate him. He wasn't the best part of the movie. And in Twister,
such a fun movie.
It's Twister. I don't know what you want.
Guilty pleasure movie right there for me. It really is.
I agree. It's a guilty pleasure, but it's Twister. I don't know what you want. But,
I don't know. But yeah. That aside, you know, there's one thing actually that I would say about the first film is that one of the things that kind of bothers me about it is I always have a hard time remembering the characters' names outside of Ash, Dallas, and Ripley.
Mm-hmm.
With this movie, you got Ripley, you've got Bishop, you've got Hudson, Hickson, Paul Reiser, you've got them all.
Yeah.
That's because they're on comms constantly saying each other's names. They have to maintain radio communication, which makes perfect sense. Which, by the way, Bishop, fantastic. Lance Henriksen, love you to death. Can't say enough good things about you.
Didn't do a whole lot in the film, but what he did was meaningful.
Don't care.
And it served its purpose and helped move the story forward. But, all right, so let's get down to the meat when they finally realize where all these fucking beasts are coming from, and they happen upon the queen in the egg chamber. Love it.
And then Ripley gets into Chekhov's mech.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Well, now they established that mech was there.
If there was ever a Chekhov's gun that was done better, I haven't seen it yet, because that was fantastic.
It was earlier in the film that mech was there because it was on the Marine dropship and passed. There was a scene of it, just like they passed it by.
That's what I'm saying. That's called a Chekhov's gun. It was established that it was there, and it was a hell of a Chekhov's gun. He was like, I'm like, wow, this probably means absolutely nothing. She's like, I feel like a fifth wheel. Maybe I can do some stuff. And then she shows up later to fight the queen in it. And I mean, the first time you watch it, you're like, holy shit, I forgot about that thing.
Yeah. When that door slowly starts pulling up, you're like,
get away from her. Yeah. Bitch. Yeah, that's
one thing. The first movie makes you dread, have fear, feel a lot of dread. This movie
it
makes
does.
You cheer.
It really does. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So speaking of the Queen Alien, what are your thoughts on the design?
Oh, fantastic!
Oh, dude, it's disgusting. It's menacing. It's just gross and bug like, and I fucking love it.
Oh yeah. It's one of the best practical effects I've ever seen. And if you ever get a chance, go on Netflix and watch the movies that made us.
Yep.
They did an episode on Aliens, and it is fantastic. It's honestly one of my favorites.
That entire series on Netflix is fantastic.
It really is. There's a couple episodes I skip because I haven't seen the movies. I haven't seen Dirty Dancing. I'm not watching that shit. But I watched the Aliens one and all the ones on horror. They're absolutely fantastic. Can't say enough good. Yeah, Jaws, great. But the Aliens one is amazing, especially when you see where the design for the mother alien started and how bad it looked and all the problems that they went to, and even how James Cameron got his start, you know, working for Roger Corman, who is a fucking legend.
Yeah, and a lunatic.
Yeah.
Well, we know that. But, Aliens, probably one of the top five best sequels of all time, because it just did what the first one did, and
that's
what sequels are supposed to do. We talked about this with Terminator. It expands the lore, gives you more of what you came to see, and shows respect to the original. Aliens did all three of those fucking things.
100%. And it didn't saturate you with the lore. It didn't try to dumb it down. It took the exact lore from the previous film and just expanded on it. Silly how they expanded. They didn't try to over-explain shit. They just stuck with it and gave you more.
Because
it turns out that this species is out to take over the universe.
No,
we didn't get that.
No, once again, they're just animals, and once again, the Whalen Corporation, like in the original, is just out to gather these things and study them and maybe weaponize them. Yeah, that's not new. We saw it in the first one. But now we have somebody actually representing them who is who's sabotaging and trying to sacrifice Newt and Ripley, and it's like, okay, stakes are higher now because A, there's more aliens, and they actually have a human being who's capable of conniving and greed and sabotage instead of just a machine who just obeys
and
orders.
It also gives you one of the
best
movie quotes of all time that I still use in everyday life. Just nuke the whole site from orbit. Only way to be sure.
Dude, you want to talk Alien had like maybe one, but like Aliens is probably one of the most quotable films I've ever seen. It's like game over, man. Get away from her, you bitch. They mostly come at night. Mostly. And I'm gonna say this. I hate the ending. Because. Hang on. No. Let me explain.
After the fight?
No. This movie ends. Hicks, Newt, Bishop, and Ripley, all safe, all go to sleep. And I hate the ending because I know how Alien 3 starts.
Yep.
Hicks, Bishop, Newt, dead. No explanation. Right. Fucking dead. I'm sorry if I'm spoiling this for you, but those characters do not make it with no explanation, and it's fucking disrespectful, and it pisses me off every time because I have to think about it.
I think in Aliens, when Newt gets captured and cocooned, that in the beginning of Alien 3... it escapes from her chest and is now running rampant on the ship. Isn't that how that started?
I don't remember. I don't think she got impregnated because they show one about to open and attack her. I think what happened was an egg got left behind on the ship somehow, and it kind of broke in. I don't fucking remember. I haven't seen that movie in like 10 years. All I know is that for some reason, Ripley survives because she's the star, but Hicks and Bishop and Newt fucking dead.
And
before the credits are done rolling, they are dead.
Bishop, you said that he survived barely because he literally got ripped apart. And you want to talk about an awesome fucking scene? You kind of knew it wasn't over, that the mother alien, that the queen alien was going to come from somewhere, and there was going to be this big fight. But that is
a thing that James Cameron does. James Cameron's movies most of the time have surprise endings. Endings. Terminator 1 had one. Terminator 2 had them. He does second
when that
endings.
Tail just burst through his chest, and then she pulls him up to her.
Just
rips him in half
and
apart. It was great. Absolutely great.
100%.
What I like.
Yeah, she didn't care about nothing with that motherfucker. It's almost like she knew it was fake.
Most about the Queen Alien.
Well, here's the thing.
What I like most about the Queen Alien is even though she was visceral and an animal, they didn't make her roar or growl. She was actually very quiet. She did hiss. Like the trolls do, but they didn't make her overly a beast, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she didn't sound like the T-Rex from Jurassic Park.
But the Queen Alien didn't care because none of the actual full-bodied xenomorphs can impregnate, so they just kill with impunity. So the Queen Alien was just doing what all the rest of them were doing. She killed him because he was just there. I don't think the Queen Alien could differentiate an android from a person. Their only mission is to kill. So I think that's the only reason that happened, because only the facehuggers can impregnate.
And the drone's mission, other than to kill, is to capture humans for impregnation. I mean, they're basically,
So.
They're worker bees.
Exactly. I mean, it's pretty much a hive system. It really is a hive system. It's just that the bees in this case, on their own, are fucking vicious, vile, and will destroy everybody on a fucking ship given a chance.
Right. Well,
if you had to say one was a better film, which one do you like better? Which one do you think is the better film all around? I'm going Alien.
I think it's unfair to compare them that way because they're so different.
They are.
Yeah, they are. They're two different classes. They're two different genres.
Yeah. Aliens or Alien. Sci-fi, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly, because it's easier to compare, you know, films in the same franchise that stay the same, like Freddy and Jason, but this one switched genres for the sequel. That's all subjective. That's it depends on what you like more.
I think that the original is one of the best sci-fi movies ever made, and Aliens is one of the best action films ever made.
I never watch these two movies apart. I always watch Alien, and then immediately after I watch Aliens because I love them both equally. If you ask me to pick which one I love more, you might as well ask me which child I love the most.
I think that's why I kind of space them out like you do, Ian, is because I do like to watch them both back to back.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you're meant to because, you know, it doesn't pick up exactly where Alien left off.
But her situation is the same.
Yeah. Exactly. It's exactly the same.
Only this time she chooses to be in the situation, whereas the first time she had no choice.
But I did like her. I loved her just straight up, fuck you, I'm not going. I don't care what life is like. We'll give you your life back. We'll pay you, whatever. And she's just like, promise me that we're going to destroy them. And we're not just going to study them. We're going to wipe them the fuck out. And she's like, I'm in. I liked that motivation.
Yeah.
Because I loved what they did with her character. She's not just somebody who tried to move on. No, she literally can't. She can't sleep. She's waking up every night from nightmares from what she experienced. And it's a 100% believable character turn from what she experienced. Even though she was asleep for 57 years, it felt like nothing to her.
I felt like she was going down there with them because she was like, if I don't make sure that they do this, they're not going to do it.
Exactly. And if I don't make sure, and if I don't see it, then I can't move on.
Exactly. It was closure.
Yeah.
She went down there for closure.
Yeah. It's obviously, if I don't see it happen, I won't believe they did it.
Exactly. And it's fantastic. And so many times when a sequel is given to a different director, this happens all the time. It doesn't work.
Most of the time.
It happened with Star Wars. Irvin Kershner, love you to death. James Cameron came in, did what James Cameron do. I mean, the man does what he does because he wants to. I'm like, hey, I'm going to explore the Marianas Trench because I fucking can.
Yeah.
James Cameron do what James Cameron do. James Cameron did what he did and fucking made Aliens. And the world is a better place.
I believe, like its predecessor, it gets a collective A+. I think this might be the first film that we've ever covered that has a sequel that we've also covered, and we both give them A+.
Oh yeah, they're both that well made.
Well, before you showed up, Seth and I did review the original Star Wars trilogy, so obviously Empire's out. We did talk about Terminator 2. You did not give it a collective A+,
but we didn't me and Seth do.
Why bother? It's a fantastic film. It literally has a 99 on Rotten Tomatoes. Do we really want to talk about it? Because I'll talk about it.
I mean, we can eventually. But these two films again—they're as perfect a sci-fi film, and two completely different facets of the genre that you could want. And if you don't like them, you know, I'm not going to say we can't be friends, but I don't want to talk movies with you because your taste of mine obviously differ to the point where I don't have any interest in hearing anything you have to say about anything.
Yeah, I've never met a person who didn't like these movies.
I don't believe I have either.
I mean,
I'm sure they're out there.
If I haven't, it's just because, or if I have, it's just because they haven't seen them.
Yeah.
They're probably just like, I don't watch those kinds of movies. Well, maybe you should give it a shot and not be so standoffish. I mean, if you want to live your life so ass backwards, be my guest.
Yeah.
But cinema's just a part of life, so stop acting like you're better than everybody.
Agreed. With that being said,
so
when's it next week, Ian?
Yeah, we're coming up on an hour. Yeah, next week we'll be joined by a good friend of the show, and he actually did suggest that we cover this, and I had already watched it. I wasn't planning on making it our pick, but since he's like, y'all should cover it, I was like, all right, but here's the deal. You have to be here with us, because he's joined us a couple of other times, so we're going to talk about She-Hulk on Disney Plus.
Alrighty.
I just said that.
Life ready.
Oh, Seth, man. What's next?
Next week.
No, the week after.
Yeah, the week after, the next week. It's Dirty Dancing, Ian. I'm kidding. See how I brought that back?
No, I don't.
Oh, you said you'd never watched that
movie? I know.
Yeah.
But also, don't ask me what's in this cup.
Okay.
I forgot.
No, we are going to cover the Guillermo del Toro film, Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, okay.
I was waiting on that.
All right, here we go. Yeah.
Dasher, do you know what you're
going to
do?
In 3 weeks' time, we're going to cover Wakanda Forever.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Fine. Fine. And just for... Just to get it out there, when it's my turn again, as much as I love very dearly Seth, your girlfriend, she does do a lot for this show. And
she'll
sorry.
She'll rip your eyes out.
I said don't ask me what's in this drink. But she suggested that we do a girlfriend suggestion. God. And so I was like, alright, you know what? You do a lot for this show. What would you like us to discuss? And she hit me with a list of things, and I'm like, oh, I've been waiting. It was at the very bottom of the list, and I was like, I've been waiting to tear this movie apart. We're gonna watch Labyrinth. I have been waiting ever since we talked about Neverending Story. I've wanted to rip this movie a new asshole.
Good.
All right.
I'm gonna say this now. Maybe I'm misjudging it because I haven't seen it in like 8 years. But if you're going to listen to us review Labyrinth in 4 weeks' time, watch it again before we do, because this is going to be one of those events of, have you seen it lately?
Yeah. Have you seen it outside of your childhood nostalgia goggles?
Exactly. Watch it before we cover it. You've got an entire month to watch Labyrinth. I'm sure you can find it somewhere. All right. Well, okay. This. I got to refill my drink. It's been real.
It's been real fun. Bye-bye.